I'm Adam Coleman, inviting you to the fifth season of The Cosmic Library from LitHub. This season, we go on our tiniest reading adventure yet, into short stories in the U.S. But this too turns out to be almost all-encompassing.
I think short stories are essentially brief encounters with felt life.
That's Oxford literary scholar Andrew Kahn, who gives us a deep history of the short story. And we hear from The New Yorker's Deborah Treisman, who explains her work as an editor of short fiction.
You know, if you are melding with another person, you don't turn that person into you, but you get to know the ins and outs of that person. So, and it's sort of like that. I always feel involved with the stories.
We bounce around between the history and current life of short stories with the novelist Justin Taylor.
The nice thing about it going out of fashion is that it really frees you up to relate to it in a different way.
This being the Cosmic Library, we make sure to go way beyond U.S. short stories, too. Here's the Washington Post critic, Becca Rothfeld.
A lot of Kafka short stories, I think, gesture at or describe sort of nightmarish geographies or architectures.
And the actor Max Gordon Moore reminds us just how wild short stories can be. With a reading in its entirety of Wakefield, the intensely strange, classic Nathaniel Hawthorne story.
He had contrived, or rather he had happened to dissever himself from the world, to vanish.
Get ready for all that and more in a season about short stories, small windows into vast universes. It's season 5 of The Cosmic Library, available soon wherever you go for podcasts.
Welcome to the Marist Review. I'm so happy to have Mona Awad here. She's the author of 13 Ways of Looking at a Fat Girl and the new novel, Bunny. Bunny is just delicious, I would have to say. So I'm so glad you're here and sitting with me. And I was wondering if you could tell us how you came up with this book. It's wild.
Yeah. Well, I was an MFA student and at a New England university. And, you know, I did actually have a very positive experience there. But
right.
Just being privy to that world, especially in the context of New England and the Ivy League school, it just seemed... And art school.
You were at Brown, yes?
Yeah, I was at Brown.
This is not, you know,
Brown
in the book.
Not at all, no. the whole atmosphere just seemed ripe for horror, but also ripe for kind of magic, too. So, that's where it kind of germinated. And then from there, I just kind of blew it up into this world that is now Bunny.
Amazing. And so I never got an MFA.
Okay.
But I worked in publishing, certainly, mm-hmm. and it was the wisdom in publishing at the time was no one should ever write a book about MFA programs.
Right, yeah.
And you went against it and you succeeded, but how? Like, were you concerned?
Yeah, I guess I was a little, but I think one of the biggest hooks for me in terms of like getting excited about the idea was thinking about how when you go to graduate school as an adult, you're an adult,
yeah.
but you're in school.
Absolutely. So you act like...
Yeah, you kind of act like a teenager again. It's very high school, you know, the experience. And, you know, it's a very insular environment. You all end up kind of using the same language. You become very intimate with each other very quickly because you're sharing so much of yourself. You know, just art school kind of asks you to do that. You're very vulnerable because you are sharing work. And you're also being asked to activate your imagination. And so it just, I don't know, it seemed like there was so much potential for danger to happen. And that possibility of danger made me think, okay, even though it's an MFA, there's a lot of things about that experience that are kind of universal in terms of the clique and the kind of outsiderness that you can kind of experience and like that high school kind of feeling that you get in an MFA. And then also just that potential for danger. That's what really excited me.
And so your main character, Samantha, finds herself in this cohort with all these other brilliant women who happen to be almost the same person.
Right.
So there are four of them.
Right.
And she's disgusted by them, and yet she's
desperately wants their approval too.
Yes, yes. And that is a very high school thing, I think. Yes. That is a very high school kind of feeling. And that's kind of why I sort of leaned into the teen movie sort of feel that the book has, because it kind of, you know, there's things about being an adult in school that feel very teen movie-ish. And one of them is that, you know, cliques form. And then, yeah, as a result of cliques kind of forming, outsiders also are there. And being an outsider is a really kind of painful experience.
Sure.
And it's, I think, for Samantha, her experience of being an outsider is something that she both wears as a badge so that she can kind of cope with the fact that
absolutely.
She's an outsider, with the more embarrassing aspects of being an outsider, the actual pain of it, the loneliness of it. But she wants to belong. So she's, I think her being repulsed by the girls is her trying to kind of own her difference and sort of become empowered by it. Then being drawn to them is, I think, her just kind of wanting to be accepted.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
And you the descriptions of the girls from the book are just so incredible. The aesthetic is so specific.
Mm-hmm.
I wrote down while I was reading Bunny, Alice in Wonderland meets ModCloth.
Oh, that's perfect. I actually read a lot of ModCloth comments.
Did
like,
you?
Yeah, like on the website, the comments that people leave about their clothing, because you can always tell when someone's disappointed with their purchase,
yes.
but they're still trying to kind of, I don't know, like just step up and sort of like it. So there's a lot of kind of, I hate this, but I have to love it in the comments.
And oh, no.
And that just, that made me think, oh, that's a very Bunny kind of thing, because it's like a monstrousness that's cloaked in this sweetness. And that's what I was trying to create with the bunnies, that kind of cuteness that is, you know, also hateful and terrifying.
So you think, so there are ModCloth customers who are just stuck with cute little Peter Pan dresses that they just didn't really.
They never wanted. Yeah.
I loved that there was a dress in the book called All She Wants to Do Is Prance, because, wow, that really sounds like.
I know.
You really.
Well, those were inspired by for sure, by those dresses. I mean, they all have such absurd names. It's so
and
funny.
Absurd patterns.
And absurd. Well, the Marie Antoinette's was definitely like the Marie Antoinette beheaded, I think it was one dress that one girl had. I want that dress. I wish that dress existed.
Of course, alongside cats.
Yeah, exactly. Cats wearing crowns.
Yeah. And they all have cardigans.
They all have cardigans.
And they eat tiny food. Yeah. And they love pumpkin spice.
They love pumpkin spice.
And
all
pink berry.
Things. Yes, yes.
So the way they are is kind of like a weirdo version of basic, right?
Yeah. Yeah. That's very true. Yeah. It's just all cute, sweet, pretty stuff, which I, on the one hand, is what it is, right? But it can cast a spell, and it certainly casts a spell on Samantha. But there's like a power, you know, there's a power to it that is dark, I think, or that because it can cast this spell. And I guess my thought was, what if there was this kind of, you know, this sinister thing at the heart of this sweetness, then what?
Absolutely.
You know? Yeah.
And so Samantha kind of enters this world seeking attention or approval or something.
Yeah.
Craft. Mm-hmm. Plays such a major role in the actual plot of the book.
Craft, yes. Yeah, absolutely.
How did you do that?
The craft of writing?
The craft of writing about the craft of writing.
Yeah. Well, you know, it's interesting because the writing of this book in some ways sort of mimics the book itself, and that it was written kind of very, very quickly in one draft over 3 months.
Oh my gosh.
And I didn't really question myself. I was afraid for a lot of it, but I was ecstatic because I was uncertain through the whole process. And I knew I was kind of going into territory that I hadn't gone into before. This book is a departure from my first book,
right,
for sure. Because magic is actually, there's magic in the book, there's horror in the book.
Mm-hmm.
but I just decided to kind of trust it. And I think you're very right in kind of in bringing up this aspect of craft, because I think this book sort of is interested in creativity as kind of a way of embracing the uncertain.
Absolutely.
Yeah, and just the beauty of the imagination, you know, its potential to kind of, you know, destroy us with,
yeah.
You know, like we could go to a very dark place, or its potential to save us and offer us consolation.
Yes. I want to read one of my favorite parts because it becomes very clear. No spoilers, don't worry. So the girls become, I say the girls because they are.
Yes, they are.
They become like Frankensteins,
mm-hmm.
and
yes.
they create these monsters. And one of these monsters has an inscrutable smile.
Yes, yes.
Thinks Samantha to herself, and he turns around and says, "Oh, I don't know about inscrutable, Samantha."
Yeah. Oh, I love that character.
So yeah. the their creations come to life and kind of tell them how they should be writing.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. And they're kind of reflections of them, you know.
Yeah.
So Samantha is a Frankenstein. You're absolutely right. That's a great way to describe it without doing a spoiler. So that's awesome. but yes, she's a Frankenstein. She's created this creature, and he's out of her control. You
right.
know, he has a will of his own, and that says something about her as a creator, and it says
yeah.
something about her imagination. You know, that she can create something that she can't dominate. Whereas the bunnies, on the other hand, who are also Frankensteins, are more interested in a kind of control.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And I love how the monsters that they all create are familiar tropes.
Oh yeah.
Like Top Gun meets mm-hmm. like I don't know
yeah.
if we can talk about that more.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, I mean, I just loved having fun with kind of popular culture and notions of like just who's hot.
You know? Absolutely.
And so I kind of let myself sort of have fun with that. So there's a Tim Riggins,
yes,
from Friday Night Lights, which
and
lovely.
And then you really go all out because I believe it's yes. The tagline on the book right now is the vegetarian meets Heathers.
Yeah,
so
exactly.
Of course there is a Christian Slater,
yes,
kind of guy.
Had to be.
Had
that.
To.
Yeah, had to. That was really really fun to play with, and the idea too that you know kind of women are sort of involved in creating these tropes and bringing these tropes in. And it, you know, it's just having fun with our desire and also the embodiments of the desire that are imposed on us.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know?
Yeah. I'm wondering if I had an old boss
mm-hmm.
When I worked in book publishing who said that she would be able to pick up a proposal and read a few pages of a manuscript and know which MFA program that person had come out of.
Oh, wow. That's incredible. That's incredible.
Do you see how like a group think kind of imposes itself?
Oh, yeah. I mean, that was something that I was really interested in looking at with this book. There's a point in the book where Samantha gets so sucked into the clique against her will that she becomes part of the bunnies to the point where they're all speaking in one voice.
Yes.
And I was definitely interested in leaning into that and the horror of that, like the scariness of that kind of groupthink, because it is scary. I mean, that's one of the risks, I guess, that you take when you go into one of these programs is
right.
the fear that you'll all start speaking the same language and then you're not really an individual artist anymore. You don't have your own imagination. You're all bound together.
And you know? And even the critiques that the group has may or may not be helpful.
Oh yeah,
in the real world.
In the real world, absolutely. I mean, that's one of the things too about art school. That's you know a danger. And as much as I have to say, I'm so grateful to these programs, and I was able to you know complete my first novel as a result of of going actually to Brown. And I had a great great, great advisors, great students, great peers who kind of encouraged me. But there is a real danger of not really getting so inside a world that you no longer are really seeing the outside world and you're no longer really being asked to speak to that world.
Yes.
You know, in a way that you will be understood, that you're just speaking to each other, you know, and that's...
And writing for each other
and lying to each other because you want to protect everyone, you know. And I think that's also true kind of, you know, outside of the context of workshop. You know, when we give each other feedback, we kind of reveal so much about ourselves, you know. And I had to make fun of that aspect of workshop because it's, you know, it's very true.
Absolutely. There's a quote I want to read to you, even though you wrote it.
Of course.
The bunny who Samantha calls Vignette in her head gives a reading, and Samantha wants to say that it's a pretentious piece of shit, that it says nothing, gives nothing, that I don't understand it, that probably no one does and no one ever will.
Right.
That not being understood is a privilege I can't afford, that I can't believe this woman got paid to come here, that I think she should apologize to the trees.
Yeah. Oh, my God. It's such an important moment in the book, of course, because she's having this interior monologue. And then I forget what she says at the end, but it's like just praise. Right.
Yeah, of course.
Ultimately, she just offers praise. And I think that moment of rage, you know, is a lot of that is also the result of being so inside a world. Like it's that danger of being so in such an insular world that all of your emotions are magnified, you know? And so and not being able to trust yourself anymore because you're so deep inside this world of art school. So the reactions, like there's this real disparity between Samantha's kind of interior response and then what she says, because she doesn't want to, there's probably a part of her that doesn't even trust that.
Right,
you know?
Of course.
Yeah.
I mean, why would you ever speak your gut?
Yeah, why would you ever do that? Yeah, she wants to be accepted. And yeah, it is kind of, it's definitely kind of a bit of a critique of workshop that you can't ever trust your feeling about somebody else's work because you've got, you know, it's you, it's subjective. How can you possibly know for sure?
Right. And it's hard enough when there's a teacher who's supposed to be telling or having an opinion about that, but then the other students also, of course, have their own opinions and are expected to tell them.
Exactly. Yeah, there's so many interesting kind of social dynamics that happen that prevent, I think, honest discussion that is actually that is useful. It takes work to kind of get there, I think.
You also mention, and a big part of the book, of course, is that outside of the college, there's a whole other part of town, a whole other kind of person who lives in that town that they do not want to see and don't consider.
Right. Yeah, that was really important to me to write about that. And actually, the passage that you read, I think, kind of touches upon that, because Samantha says, you know, I could never afford to not be understood. I could never afford that. And that's a class comment for sure.
Absolutely.
You know, and there is like a real class disparity between the university community in the book and this, you know, community beyond it, which is, you know, something I saw in Providence to some degree for sure. And I think it's true of a lot of university towns.
Absolutely.
You know, there's this bubble of privilege that the university community lives in. And then beyond that, there's this other world. And each world is kind of like informing the other. You know, so within the bubble, the outside seems scary.
Yes.
And even more like run down than it probably is.
Yes.
You know,
yes.
And then, you know, the bubble just seems shinier and, you know, more rarefied than, you know, it probably is too.
There are all these studies now that say that, you know, so many college students, I mean, especially, I guess, particularly undergrads, are poor.
Oh yeah,
are struggling to
absolutely
find meals to eat day to day.
Yeah, I actually heard. So Samantha, at one point in the book, she lives in her car, because she can't afford housing. You know, that was inspired by hearing that there were students on campus who were living in their cars. So, you know, it's definitely reality that there are a lot of people going to these schools who can you know, cannot afford to be there at all, cannot afford to live there and have shelter and have meals and all of those things. So it's quite a sacrifice.
And then, of course, it's impossible not to compare yourself, if that's who you are, mm-hmm. to the girls in the cute sweaters.
Yeah, it's impossible not to feel that magnification of your own kind of, you know, your own position, your own social class, and to feel that outsiderness. And that's, again, where sort of, you know, as cheesy as they can be, that's kind of another reason why the teen movies were so inspiring to me, is because they explore that, you know, some of the great ones do anyway.
Yes.
You know, the most iconic ones do. They're interested in the outsider who comes from a different class, because that's a real experience that can deepen that feeling of loneliness and alienation.
Yes. So we started with Heathers.
Yeah.
But what other films were you thinking about?
As I was saying that, I was thinking of Pretty in Pink.
Of course. Yeah. Of course.
Molly Ringwald living across the tracks and, you know, the other
making
side.
Her own dress.
Making her own dress. Yeah. I love that movie so much.
Yeah, me too.
And, you know, I mean, I do love Heathers so much. Mm-hmm. I love The Craft too.
Yes.
Not as campy, but wonderful, you know? I mean, it's so good. It's like just, I forget what the name of the main character is, but I love the way she kind of becomes this, you know, this real strong protagonist.
Absolutely.
At the end, you know,
yes.
She's great. And Carrie. Carrie was another big one for me.
I see that you're wearing a necklace, if you want to describe it.
Yeah. this is a little image of Carrie covered in blood. Yeah, in a locket.
Seems appropriate for tonight.
Very appropriate for Bunny.
That's
absolutely
great.
Yeah. I think Carrie and Samantha have some things in common for sure.
Absolutely.
Me too.
And so what books informed this book, if any? And I don't know, does your taste and Samantha's taste maybe overlap or veer aside in some ways?
Yeah, that's a really good question. I think with books, I was really in the world of this, and I didn't read a lot during the writing of this, because I really wanted to tap into Samantha's voice and the bunnies in particular.
Yes.
Like there was a real, like I wanted to capture that kind of kawaii, sweet, or
yes.
Kind of cute. So, you know, ModCloth comments were great for that. Great
That's
for voice.
Yes.
Yeah. But I did have in my head fairy tales, mm-hmm. and especially like fairy tale logic, you know, which kind of just doesn't really explain itself, you know. Mm-hmm. The wonder in fairy tales is so potent and potentially dark, but potentially just your wildest dreams come true.
Yes.
Because it's not explained. It's just there. We accept it. We accept the magic in fairy tales. So that kind of dream logic was really important. And then specific fairy tales like Cinderella, of course. This book, the first iteration of this book in my head was going to be about a gang of Snow Whites. So,
I can kind of see that, right?
Yeah.
The bunnies are a version of Snow White.
Yeah, girl gang of Snow Whites.
And they are also drawn, of course, to fairy tales.
Yes, yes. They love fairy tales, too. So that's some crossover territory that they share that I think is part of the reason why Samantha gets so entranced by them. They have a magic that I think is kind of connected to fairy tale. And then absolutely Beauty and the Beast was essential. There is even a Beauty and the Beast variation called The Hare's Bride, and it's got a bunny animal, like a bunny groom.
Beastie, yeah. Bunny groom.
Yeah. And it's a very sad short story, so it doesn't really, the story itself I didn't really take from, but the idea of a rabbit groom, I definitely, not to give anything away, definitely inspired me for sure.
Yes.
Yeah.
And what are you reading now?
What am I reading now?
Yeah.
What was one of the last things that I read that I loved? I reread After Leaving Mr. McKenzie by Jean Rhys.
Oh.
I just love her. I love her. her use of voice. I love the way she captures that sense of alienation you can have, even when you're just right, kind of, you're in the middle of a cafe surrounded by people and yet you're completely alone.
Yes.
It's so, I don't know why it's so comforting to me to read her, but it really, really is.
Oh, that's great. Yeah. I have to go back.
Yeah, she's wonderful and so, like, moody. And I also read, I started reading a book by Tia Mutangi, who's a Canadian Congolese writer, and the collection is called Shut Up, You're Pretty. And it's really great. Uh-huh. It's I love the voice. It's like this kind of teen voice, and it's I don't know, it's very innocent, but there's I can tell there's some darkness coming. So I'm really enjoying that.
That's great. Is that new?
Yeah, it's okay. New. It just came out in April, I think.
Okay.
Yeah.
Excellent. Well, this has been lovely.
Yeah, no.
Thank you so much.
This has been great. Thank you so much for having me.
I think that listeners should know that they need to read Bunny right away so that we can all talk about it and try to figure out what it means, even though.
Right.
Yeah. Thanks.
Thanks so much.
Thank you for listening to the Maris Review, and check the show notes for the books we discussed on here today. And please subscribe wherever you get your podcasts. Thank you for listening to the Maris Review, and check the show notes for the books we discussed on here today. And please subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.